Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Narrative Aspirations. When we aspire, we do go higher. Join us each and every Wednesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. as we highlight the movers and the shakers, the people in our community who use their God-given talents to help remake the world into a better place for all people. Or we may be a content provider for the evening. And this evening, we will be highlighting Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahim Allah Alay, as we are currently assisting in the planning of the 2024 ATTBG, A Time to be Grateful. And so I will do the honors of allowing us to feast on the knowledge and wisdom and then put into practical application the words of Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahim Allah Alay. Again, this is Sister Khalida Akbar, producer of Narrative Aspirations. We aspire, we will go higher. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
You are listening to W.D. Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W.D. Muhammad, The following lecture by Imam Muhammad is entitled Human Intellect, Part 2, recorded September 27, 1992, at the University of Illinois in Follinger Auditorium in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
I ain't listen to him. I don't want nobody to tell me. He's a traitor. He's a traitor to the black race. You know, make all up all kind of excuses. But if they heard Hitler was going to be here today, he was a traitor to the human race. They'd be all around.
You are listening to W. Dean Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
The following lecture by Imam Muhammad is entitled Human Intellect, Part 1, recorded September 27, 1992, in Follinger Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
Assalamu alaikum. And it's peace be on you. Our praise to the one God, the Lord, creator, sustainer of all the worlds. And we witness that he is but one alone, that he depends on none for the run of the heavens and the earth. He sustains all things by himself, needing nothing from anything that he has created. And we witness that Muhammad, to whom the Quran was revealed about 1400 and a few years ago, is the last prophet and Allah's messenger and servant. And we salute him with the traditional salute, the most excellent salute, Ameen. We trust God to bless us with good results from our efforts. We obey his religion that he revealed to us by way of the prophets and completed and perfected with the last prophet. We seek to have innocent and pure intentions, and we trust that Allah will give us the good results. Before beginning to address the topic, I would like to express something that is on my heart right now, and that is to say we congratulate again the Muslim chaplains and the Imam of Champaign here in Champaign, Illinois, Imam Muhammad Abdullah, and all those who worked with them to make the occasion last night what it was. And that was a very impressive, very impressive occasion. And we'd like to also acknowledge that there was a speech given, or a lecture given by two persons, and the lectures were filled with information, useful information, especially for me, for us in the ministry, and was sincere, very sincere, and that's what impressed me most of all, that the speakers were very sincere and very well qualified and prepared. And they complimented each other. The first speaker, the director, Peters, he addressed the problem of crime and our youth falling victim to crime, and the burden on the taxpayers, and how that burden could be lifted and money could be better used. And then he was complimented by the second speaker, Miss Harris, Zelina Harris, who dealt with the conditions before even the crimes are noticed or even the crimes are committed, the home condition, the neighborhood, the community condition. And I understood her to be placing responsibility, or at least trying to get us to see that responsibility is on us and our homes, parents and families, and on the neighborhood to create an environment, to work to create an environment that will be conducive to good productive behavior instead of self-destructive behavior. So I really appreciated the evening last night, and I just had to make those comments before beginning this address. So it's very difficult to ever see the whole picture of a public figure. Very difficult. the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who made the name Muslim known in the African-American community, in the black community, and made the name Allah and the name Muhammad and the Quran, the one who made all of that terminology known to us, is Elijah Muhammad. And I know many of us think we know him. I think we knew him. We knew him as a public figure, but few of us knew him as a father. Few of us knew him as a husband, like my mother did. few of us knew him on the basis of just friendship, like some of these brothers sitting before me here did. I'm looking at some of them right now. They knew him as not only as a leader, but they knew him as a friend. They knew him as a brother. In the ranks with other brothers, they knew him as a friend. when it comes to me, the same thing goes, or to any other figure, public figure, we only see what is presented. And most times we are not able to really know the person in an intimate way or in a close-up, get a close-up look at that person, to see the human side, to see the private life, the human side of that person. And it's very important to know the human side of a figure that you seek respect or seek guidance from. If you respect the figure, a public figure, and you seek guidance or respect what that person says enough to let it influence your life, then you should try to see the human side of that person as well. And the human side is revealed, but it's not the point. The speaker will never make a point of revealing his human side. But if you are a person that's turned on, sensitive, you're sensitive to the human side of a person, you can listen to a public figure and still and also come to know him as the human side of him. You can come to know him in a way that most listeners would not know him. And a few did listen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and they did come to know him in that way, because I know they told me. When I would be telling them certain things about what I know of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they would tell me, so they would say, Brother Imam, or Brother Minister, I used to be called Brother Minister, say, look, say, you know, I saw that in your father. Then I knew that too. And they start telling me things that they registered. And we would begin to feel real comfortable with each other, because we were identifying with each other, that we saw something in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that we thought was very important. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said all white people are devils. But he didn't discover that. Someone told him that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said a white person is born devil. They can't be born any other way except as a devil. You know, all the babies are born devils. Well, if he didn't discover that, somebody told him that. Yeah. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the black man is God, the owner, the maker, the cream of the planet Earth, the father of civilization, the God of the universe, and he knows every square inch of it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't discover that. Somebody told him that. And it wasn't the black man. It wasn't nobody from America. It was somebody from overseas that said he was bringing the religion, bringing Islam. Okay? And when we look in the Quran, we don't find any of that. That's not in the Quran. So, hey, where is that? Where is that? We can't find it in the Quran. But he said he was bringing us Islam. You know, when we look in the history of Islam, we don't find any of that. But he said he was bringing us Islam. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us many things. And he told us, he said, I'm the messenger of God. I'm Allah's messenger. That's what he said. But he didn't leave us to wonder whether he's talking about God, you know, invisible God, or God of Judaism or something like that, or God of the Quran or anything like that. He made it clear that the God, he said, that came to me, came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. He said it came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. So he identified the same man that taught him those things, he identified that man as his God. And then he said he was chosen to be the messenger of that God. Now, he didn't leave us totally dependent upon his God. How come he didn't leave us totally dependent upon his God? Because he told us that his God would live about 500 years. Well, I would like to see my children live 5,000 years or more. I would like to see my children outlive, the generation of my family outlive that God. So he didn't leave us totally dependent on his God, you see? He said his God was going to die one day. Now, he didn't leave us totally dependent upon his teachings either. He said, someone will come after me and bring in the religion. So I'm not teaching you religion so much as I'm cleaning you up. He said, I'm cleaning you up, getting you ready. He said, someone will come after me and bring the religion. He said, that one that comes may use part of what we have or may not use anything of what we have. Now, should it shock those who believed in him, if they really accept what he said, should it shock them that now we come with something that is totally different? We put aside most of what he gave us. We put aside all the Yaakov's history. We put aside all those things, you know, and we pick up the Quran and we put emphasis on the religion. Brother, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad saw this happening exactly as it has happened or not. We certainly must agree that the man must have been in some way psychic. He must have been in some way psychic to predict an outcome that resembles very much what has happened. He said, someone will come and give you the religion, teach you the religion. And he said, they may not use anything of what we have. Well, if anybody is really good in his heart and really means well, he'll never throw away that is good. He'll only throw away that is incorrect or bad, and he'll keep that's correct and good. So we find that we keep and cherish and thank Allah for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and thank him for his good works, and we keep and cherish much of his good works and much of his good teachings, because much of his good teachings is applicable right now to our conditions. But we can't raise what he told us, though it be good and sound and acceptable. We cannot raise what he gave us above the book that he raised above everything, and that is the Quran. He didn't teach us the Quran, but he did lift the Quran above everything, even the lessons, even Yaakov's history, everything. So I thought I would say that to you before going into my topic. Now, I want to tell you something else. I realize that I'm on the campus of the University of Illinois here in Champaign, Urbana. And I realize that perhaps we have a few members of the student body here, perhaps even some of the faculty might be here. I realize that. But I also am aware that I'm looking at people that I became who I am among. I became who I am among you. You know, I'm looking at people who knew me when I was a teenager. That's right. I'm looking at people who knew me when I was a teenager. And that can't help, I can't help but have my mind and heart influenced by their presence. Yes. So my talk is going to be flavored a little differently because of their presence. You'll find, if you really listen closely to me, you who have known my father, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if you listen closely to me, you will find that we are very similar. We are very similar. The older I get, the more I realize how much I'm like my father, the late leader Elijah Muhammad. Yes, I do. I listen to myself sometimes, I say, that sounds like Daddy. Well, that's natural. It's natural that a son should be like his father, you know? That's natural. I find that even my appetite for certain things, the older I get, the more my appetite gets like his. And I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud of it. I like it. I love that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if I would describe him without bringing in myth, you may call what I call myth, some of you who haven't studied myth like I've studied myth from the following of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you may call divine science, wisdom, supreme wisdom, or whatever. But I call it myth. And I find that when I'm talking, I tend to be somewhat influenced by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's ability, his skills, to juggle dynamite and oatmeal, you know, or I should say nitroglycerin and no oatmeal, you know. And he keeps his mind on oatmeal, and he keeps his mind on nitroglycerin. And when he leaves, there was no explosion. Nobody got killed. Everything was safe. Everything worked out fine. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad also, I see him as a man. And by that, when I gave you that little illustration there, really what I want to say is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, though he had no high school education, no formal education, he never attended high school. And he only went to the third grade of elementary school in the poor South. So we can say he had no formal education. He was a man who learned by reading and listening to others, coming in contact with knowledge. That's how he learned. And most of what he learned was from the man that he said came as a stranger, and he was a strange man, the man that gave him his idea for the Nation of Islam, W.D. Farad, W. Farad Muhammad. Yes, so most of his education, his knowledge came as a result of that. Although he was a person who was reading and studying and questioning everything in the early years of his life. We know that from his mouth and from the mouth of my mother and from the mouth of his mother, my grandmother. We know that he studied and questioned religion, the church, and Christianity as a young man. And he came from the South, like most of our people did, to the North, to Detroit. He came to Detroit with his family and began working in Detroit. And he continued to study and question. He was influenced somewhat by Marcus Garvey, who had his African-American movement before the Nation of Islam ever got to be popular. And Drew Ali, Noble Drew Ali, who himself introduced the kind of Islam. It was also made up religion by a person or persons. But it was introduced as Islam, and I think these inventors of these artificial brands of Islam really feared that if they introduced true Islam to America in the black community, in the African-American community, that they would be killed or deported. If they were not citizens of this country, they would be deported or either killed, you see. So I think that they were more interested in influencing African-Americans or blacks away from allegiance to the white man and to the white world and to, more importantly, to white man's ideas, and to wean African-American people off of white man's ideas in hopes that the African-American would one day begin to think with self-confidence, think himself on his own with self-confidence and become an independent thinker for himself and for his own people. I believe that was their intent. And if that was their intent, then God will reward them based upon their good intent. He will reward them, even though they made terrible errors in presenting Islam incorrectly. If that was their intent, we are told in Islam, matters are judged by intent. Matters are judged by intent. If you believe you're doing it right, and you believe it sincerely in your heart, then God will not punish you, even though you were doing something wrong, because you were not consciously erring. You were not consciously erring. You were doing what you thought would be good. So God will reward them. If that is true, then I expect the Honorable Elijah Muhammad will be rewarded with paradise, because he did much more good than a lot of people who call themselves holy and straight. So I believe he'll be rewarded with paradise. And if Farad was sincere in what he did, I say the same thing of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teacher. I do believe God will reward him with paradise if he was having good intentions and the feeling that his work would be good. And his intentions were good. Most of all, his intent has to be good. If you're doing it for money or for power, no, the intent is wrong. You can't do it for money. You can't do it for power. You got to do it to please God. You got to do it for what's right. You see, not for the material benefits and not for worldly statue or worldly fame. No, that won't work. If we do it for that, we're sinners and we get the punishment. We go to hell for corrupting religion. So we who love the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we should pray for his soul. We should remember him and pray for his soul. And we should pray for each other. I know some of you do. And I know I do. Yes. So another thing about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that stands out in me is that he believed in what he believed in, and nothing could break him from that belief. Nothing could break him from that belief. And he didn't fear any consequences when it came to standing up for what he believed God wanted him to do. Nothing could shake him or break him. If Farad said don't eat peanuts, they take 5 years off your life. He might slip and eat some peanuts, you know. He said, these are not the red-skinned ones. He said the red-skinned ones are the real bad ones. Yeah. So he might slip and eat some peanuts, you know. But that's not breaking allegiance to the teacher. It's important matters that really count. As long as you uphold the important matters, then you are upholding that leader. You're upholding that person. He upheld the important matters. He never backed off of those important matters. Until he was almost facing death and saw a change in America that was so convincing, he just had to acknowledge these changes. He saw America change from one of two laws, one for white people and one for black people, to one of one law. He lived to see that. Now, whether some of us right now, we have people that blow up things, and they say right now we're in prison camps, you know. I hear some blacks talking. They say we're in prison camps, and I don't see nobody with the key to the prison but them. But they say they're in prison camps. They say they're locked up. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad realized that circumstances had changed so great, so drastically in this country that he had to change his tune somewhat. So he began to soften his tune. He began to even appeal to us, and I never heard him speak like this before. When he was speaking to our community, he said, I tell you this, he said, and I mean it from my heart. He said, if the white people can accept you, then you accept them. That's what he told us at one of his national conventions. Maybe not his exact words, but that's very close to his exact words. If white people can accept us and treat us fairly, be nice by us, then the burden of decency should be on us. To at least return the same to them. A wise man like that, he would look stupid getting up there telling you Yaqub's history was wrong and this was wrong and that was wrong. He just let you know by the way, by his attitude, I have changed my attitude. It's time for you to change yours. Yeah. So the wisdom of Lord Elijah Muhammad, he stands out for his wisdom, for his psychology. He had ability. He had a natural ability, to rule us, be our leader, and rule us with his own special psychology. He had his own special psychology, and sometimes we differed as to that psychology. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to me once, "Say, son," he said, "I know you're gonna." Be the person that you are to be, he said, but you can never get our people doing something, talking soft to them. He said, son, you got to ride, what they call a cowherd or something like that, he said. He said, and you have to have the whip. He said, and you got to pop it every now and then. Yeah, he was right. But I'm not cut out for it, but he was right. Yep, you get the best result from our people when you don't listen to them, when you talk to them and don't listen to them, when you give them orders and don't accept any excuses, when you be the only superior and they all inferiors, you get the best results from our people. Now I hope that day will change, but it hasn't changed yet. It ain't quite as bad as it used to be, though. It's changing. But that's the description of us. Not only that, we like to be led by false people. Yeah, we do. We like to be led by false people. The bigger, more phony he is, the more we like him. And the more we give him. We go and listen to him and just enjoy him. Get up and give him $100. We ain't got number $2 left. Give him $100 into the offering. Big phony. We'll buy him the latest car and the most expensive car. Dress him up so he looks like the private pimp of the United States. Looks like he's pimping everybody that's available to support a pimp. You know, he got the wardrobe out of sight, wardrobes and rings and everything. He's loaded with sparks. He's sparkling all over. And he's dressed and he dumps out in the car. Look like Buck Rogers designed it. And we just love him to death. Praise God for his life and safety and happiness. Yeah, many of us still like that. Yeah, many of us are still like that. But we ain't satisfied with that. We're going to change. That's right, we are changing, and we're going to change more. Another thing that I admire about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as extraordinary attributes of his wisdom was an extraordinary attribute. His psychology that he used was an extraordinary attribute. His devotion and obedience was an extraordinary attribute. And one other thing I'm going to mention before going into my topic. His boldness. Boldness. He was a bold man. He was bold enough to challenge the people that didn't want to do nothing but come in and sleep. Sit down in the chair and go to sleep. He would challenge you to take over the supermarket and run it. Wake up and get up there and accept the responsibility to run this supermarket. And you sitting there sleeping while he's talking about business. You ain't interested in nothing. You're sitting there nodding. Wake up! Man of bold faith. Bold faith. Bold courage and bold faith. Very bold. And he would try to excite us to be bold and courageous. He say, you know what my Savior say about it? The whole race of these devils that he could put all of them on a string and tie it around his baby finger and shake them like that. Well, you see, a man talking to you like that, you know, if you've been excited to intimidated to see the white man as a big towering figure, he starts to get smaller while that man is talking to you if you have the courage to sit there and hear him out.
We'll be right back after these brief announcements. Thank you for your continued support for Imam W. Dean Muhammad's ministry. Your contributions are sincerely appreciated. Send your donations to the Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. That's the Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. Thank you. And now we return to Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
Please turn the tape over to side two for more of Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
Well, you see, a man talking to you like that, you know, if you've been excited to intimidated to see the white man as a big towering figure, he starts to get smaller while that man is talking to you, if you have the courage to sit there and hear him out. Now, I witnessed that some of them didn't have the courage. They start sneaking out when he start talking. They get up real easy out of their seat. But I'm looking at some of those right here who sat through it all. They sat through it all. They were brave enough to hear him out. And thank Allah, now we are rewarded more than we ever were before. So we must appreciate the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for that boldness, for that courage to look at a people that seemingly had no aggressiveness at all, no ability to face the challenge of white world dominance and superiority by white world society, complete total ownership by white people and everything, a people without enlightenment, a people without the tools of education, a people without the means, the worldly means, to encourage them to stand up to the white man and begin to accept responsibility for their own life and their own future, to begin working for the future of a nation of blacks on this earth where that would be independent and responsible for itself, that was, I'm telling you, really a phenomenal thing. Really a phenomenal thing. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad leading that courageous effort has to be seen as a man having an attribute of extraordinary boldness and courage. Boldness and courage of faith and also action. Faith and action. Now, I still somewhat believe that psychology can be justified, though it was stretched and used in the extreme. That makes it unacceptable now in light of what Allah has revealed in Quran and what established by Muhammad, not a myth, but a man, alive in history, Muhammad the Prophet, the prayers and the peace be on him. So in light of that, we can't accept that anymore. But let me tell you something. I believe Islam should be applied as science is applied. I believe Islam is to be applied as knowledge is applied. Islam is most of all knowledge, ilm. Ilm is the Arabic term, or Quranic term. Islam is most of all knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. We know the condition for getting that knowledge is a sound heart, an innocent heart, a sincere heart, a true heart, a faithful heart. That's the condition for receiving that blessing from Allah. But the great instrument of progress is knowledge. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even when he was encouraging us to become equal with the white man or to seek equality with the white man, he used knowledge as the criteria. He said, you will not become equal until you have equal knowledge. And those are the exact words of Elijah Muhammad. You will not become equal until you have equal knowledge. Well, if you are Muslim, how many Muslims we have? Raise your hand. Muslims. Thank you. That's a great majority of you are Muslim. Well, let me tell you. If you Muslims, you should feel that you now have opportunity to become equal with the white man. Because the Quran is definitely equal knowledge. It equals all knowledge. Ain't no knowledge that can rise above Quran. And it is superior knowledge. So you who are Muslims, if you believe that, then you should be feeling in a good situation now. You should feel yourself in a good situation to exist, progress, compete, and rise to top positions in America and any other country if you devote yourself to the purpose. Because the Quran is not average knowledge. It is the best of knowledge. All right? It is the best of knowledge. So I tend to also put focus on the intellect, the human intellect. And I believe that this is the way of the prophet, peace be upon him. The way of the prophet was to address the human intellect. The heart, certainly the heart too, is necessary to address the heart. But most importantly, it is to address the human intellect. A human being, in our physical makeup or in our biological makeup, we differ from the animal, but we are more like the animal in our physical and biological makeup than we are like the animal in our spiritual and intellectual makeup, our mental makeup. The mental makeup and the spiritual makeup of the human being is what gives the great difference, makes the great difference between the human being and the animal. Some of us think the great difference between the human being and the animal is that we are better. We are more moral. We are nicer. A human being, human is to be sweet, nice. We think human means kindness, love. It means all that. But in that particular area, we are not superior to the animals. Just study animals, and you'll see they practice love as much as we practice love. They practice love of young, love of their babies, just as much as our wives and mothers practice that love. They exhibit a willingness to sacrifice their life for their young, for their children, just as much as our wives and our mothers exhibit a willingness to sacrifice their lives for their young. They will suffer and go lean and not eat to feed their children, just like the women. So don't think that our great difference from the animal is to be seen in our goodness. No. But I tend to at least appreciate them for saying that in our treatment of our families, in our treatment of our children, we are no better than the animals, and many animals are much better than us. So where is our great distinction? It is in our mind. It is in the intellect. That's where we are greatly different. And it is in our spirit. Because of limited free will, or limited free spirit, and we say limited, Muslims choose to say limited, because that freedom is not ours, it is a trust. God give it to us as a trust. And he has created the world and us in such way that if we try to get all the freedom we want without respect, we will end up being denied that freedom. That freedom will be denied us. We'll be cut off from that freedom. So we say a limited freedom. Man is given freedom, but a limited freedom. The freedom is the freedom of choice. The freedom of choice. Freedom to choose, good or bad. The freedom to choose, right or wrong. The freedom to choose morally as well as rationally. The freedom to choose. So man has the freedom of choice, and he's a free spirit. It said that man is a free spirit. we accept that and we appreciate that, but we know that as human beings, we have been put on this earth for a purpose. We believe in God. That's what identify us with Christians and with Jews and with other people who see one as authority over them and all. One in charge over all, over their life, over their existence, over everything. That's where we identify with them. We believe in, and many other areas we identify, but that's first. That's first where we identify with the people of religion, the people of faith, that we believe in God. Now, you see, I come here and you can't see me, no tie. You say, why? He has no tie on. Dress shirt and no tie. Well, I like to go like this sometimes. This is a 16 and a half, and when I put a tie on, it makes it feel like a 15 and a half. And 15 and a half chokes me. So I didn't want to take the time to take off this nice shirt. I put it on, and it looked nice. And I didn't have it. I said, the tie doesn't feel comfortable. I said, I'm going out and wearing like that. I'm going out like this. Like this. You know, I said, they may think it's symbolic, but it ain't symbolic today. It's comfortable. But believe me, I do wear a tie. And all Muslims wear ties. And they're black ties. Yes. All Muslims wear ties, black ties. Yes. What is that tie? Tie of faith. Tie of faith. We're like Christians in that we believe, we have faith. We are people of faith. We are like the people of religion. We are people of faith, you see? So our tie is the tie of faith in God, faith in God, and faith in what he has revealed, and faith in his prophets, you see? So our tie is the tie of faith. First of all, is the tie of faith. Now, you know, with faith comes hope, doesn't it? Yeah. People who have faith, they have hope. No faith, no hope, you see? So with faith comes hope. So the first black is the black of blackness of faith. And the first whiteness is the whiteness of hope. Yeah. Yeah. See, with hope, there's some light, right? See, faith is the willingness to go without seeing. They may call it that blind faith, that total faith, blind faith, total faith, to go without seeing. And then hope is a condition that says, I see something. I see something, you see. Hope indicates that you recognize something. Yeah, not just faith, you also recognize something. A baby comes here in the world having faith in his mother. It's natural for him. So he lives his first days with his eyes closed. Well, most of the time closed. He might open them occasionally, you know. Or she might open hers occasionally. But the eyes closed. Trusting his mother blindly. That's what I mean. The baby, new baby, trusts the mother blindly. And that's how we should come to God. Now, if we already have some knowledge, then we come with a little light. But if we have no knowledge, then we should accept to believe in God on faith. And faith is a condition that we are born with. Just as that baby is born to trust his mother, every human being is born to trust a superior power over it, a power responsible for its existence. And in time, if it receives the right kind of environment and is blessed by God, that child will acknowledge God as God is revealed in the scriptures, will acknowledge God and become a believer proper. I believe that we as Muslims should focus more on the intellect, the human intellect. When God says he's going to create a man, he wasn't talking about a romantic figure in the mind of some romanticist of the romantic age in Western history or in Western culture or any other culture or history. And Allah says, highly glorified is he, I'm going to create a man, a human being. We are to understand as Muslims that he's saying he's going to create an intellect, an intelligent, responsible human person. With attention first on the intellect. The womb of birth for the human creation is the motivation to excellence in our nature that we are born with. We are born with a motivation to excellence. This motivation to excellence is in everything, not just us, but every life has that motivation to excellence. Every life begins from simple form to less simple form. From more dependent form to less dependent form. from less attractive form to more attractive form. So we find that all life, not just our life, all life is born to grow and progress from lesser to greater, from inferior to better, from dependency to less dependency, from poor performance to better performance. So this is the trend that's set in all life. The human being, because of our freedom to choose, our special intellect that we have, special mind that we have, we benefit the most. We benefit the most. But as Allah says, we are also subject to suffer the most, or to be degraded the most, because of the same freedom, the same independence that we have, the freedom of limited freedom of choice. Because if we are taken from this direction in our life, we can become regressive, and we can use our brain, the same intelligence, the same freedom of thought and freedom of mind, freedom of spirit, and everything that we have that is intended to better us, to better our condition, and to guide us and to bring us in better situations. We'll do the reverse if we break with that tendency or with that natural line in our nature, natural line for excellence in our nature. We can look at history very briefly or very quickly, and we can see that history testifies to that. Arabia, for example. Arabia was in the Dark Ages. The time when the Prophet was born is called Jahiliyyah. Jahiliyyah. Ignorant, and it means ignorant age. Or the West, in American language, we would say Dark Ages. The society had regressed because it had gotten off that natural line of motivation to excellence. It had gotten off of that. And it had begun to take pride in silly things, petty things, instead of pride in its best tool, best muscles, and best senses. See? When we put down our best tools, our best muscles, and our best senses, then we become retrogressive. We regress. Become regressive instead of progressive. And many times, a society is not aware that it is regressive. It thinks of itself as progressive, when it's really regressive, because its values have changed. If we change the values to take pride in dehumanizing values rather than humanizing values, then we will be praising ourselves and saluting our achievements that are taking us back down the ladder when it comes to grades and human excellence, you see. We're thinking that we are really doing a great job, thinking that we are really well off, thinking that we are really the most advanced people on earth. Let me tell you something about American society. In truth, American popular culture is the most savage culture I'm aware of. Now, there might be one worse, I'm not aware of it. I'm not aware of any culture more savage, more humanly degrading than the popular culture of the United States of America. Now, there might be another, I don't know about it. It would be much safer for me and my children to live in any jungles on this planet than to live in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, places like that. Much safer. I feel much more comfortable raising my children and leading them in prayers and teaching them Quran and Sunnah and guiding them to the way of Islam best I could if I was in some of these primitive jungles of South America, Africa, India, any place. I'd feel much safer with my family. This is the wildest place on earth. But we would like to cheer and praise ourselves for being better than everybody else. You're worse than everybody else. When it comes to popular culture of America, we're worse than everybody else. That's why it's so necessary in America to cherish freedom. To cherish freedom. Your freedom in America is your heaviest responsibility. There's no responsibility American carries heavier than their freedom, heavier than his or her freedom. And I hope you're registering what I'm saying, because it is very important if you don't already feel that way. That's very important. Your freedom is the heaviest burden you carry if you're a live, conscious human being in the United States of America. But if you're not live, you're not conscious, you don't have any burden. Only when somebody deny you your wildness. Aim for excellence, a principle for empowering the intellect. Dear people, believers, whether academic or streetwise, religious or secular, political or anti-government, flamboyant, are modest, we all aim for recognition. Allah Most High says in the Quran, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ التَّقْوِيمِ لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ التَّقْوِيمِ God says that we have certainly formed or created the human in the best of mold. In the best of mold. Now you who have worked in some of these factories that I have, you know what a mold is. They make a mold, and the mold allows them to make many copies. One mold, many likenesses. So we are told in the Quran that we were created from one human person, one person, one nafs, one person, one soul. From that model, from that mold, many likenesses. Allah, to me, approves of my self-worth. I have a need to have a comfortable self-worth, to feel good about myself as a creature of value, a creature of some worth. And Allah approves of me wanting that when He says to me, and Allah is saying to each one of us with the revelation, that He created us in the best mold or image. Created us in the best image, the best mold or image. The Ahsani Taqweem. The very word that says best, that is translated in English best, that word is also used when you want to tell somebody that their work is excellent. Is excellent. It's the same word. It's for excellence too. So this word addresses the aim for excellence in our nature. In our nature. God is saying that He created every man and woman with the aim for excellence in their nature. The Ahsani Taqweem, with the aim for excellence in their nature. Now, dear people, I don't know what you hear about me, but like I said, it's hard to keep the whole picture of a public figure before you. But I'm no less interested in serving the betterment, the improvement of African-American people in this country than I was when I was under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I'm more interested now in working hard to improve the condition of African American people in this country. Doesn't mean that that's my only interest. No, if I hear any other people, I'm interested in all people. My interest is in all people, but I don't know of any people that need more attention, even today in 1992, 1993 almost, than African-American people. Now, when that situation changed, then perhaps you'll hear me talking about this, that the Indian, I'll be saying, yes, God is moving me to address the condition of the Indians, American Indians. Now, I know they, you say, well, they don't have as much as we are. They're not recognized. They don't have the visibility and the acceptance in society and that we do. That's right. But you go and talk to them and you see that they have better condition than we have. I know. I talk to them. And some of them look down on us. They think our condition is worse than theirs. See, it's not all for the human, for the satisfaction of the soul. It's all not all about how much you're recognized in Congress, how many seats you hold in Congress, how many Senate seats you have, you know, what chance you have for the presidency of the United States. Are you a legislator? Are you part of the government? You know, how many banks you have? It's not all about that. It's about how much respect you have among yourselves, from each other, how well-knit your family is, how strong your family bonds are, how much pride you have in your own ability as a community. And they are so proud that they refuse to be taken over by Western culture. Their pride is keeping them out of visibility and out of places in or what you call high places. Yeah, it's that pride. I talked to some of them. I lived with them for a while in prison for selective service violation. That was my offense. And I lived with some Indians up there in Minnesota. They had a number of them there, good number of them there. I lived with them. And I learned from them that they are proud people, and they have faith even now that divine powers are going to act on their behalf and rescue them from their situation in America. They still have that hope. How many of you still have the hope that divine powers are going to rescue you from your situations of dependency on dope traffic, wine, gambling, wasteful spending, and low self-esteem? How many of you still have the faith that God is going to rescue from your condition? Not many. Not many. So the American Indian may be much better off than we are. On the whole.
Thank you for tuning in. We are going to go to part two.
There's no way any other race would hear that the son of Elijah Muhammad is coming to this place here and not fill up this whole place and be standing all around the outside. No other race.
About tonight's broadcast,
no other race on this planet.
Email us at info.
Oh, I don't care how special he is. I ain't going to listen to him. Let's boycott him.
And give us some comments. Tonight we are listening to
him. I ain't listening to him. I don't want nobody to tell me. He's a traitor. He's a traitor to the black race.
And also,
you know, make all up all kind of excuses.
Will be held in Miami. If you are interested.
But if they heard Hitler was going to be here today, he was a traitor to the human race. They'd be all around there, standing all out there. I want to see and hear Hitler.
Because Imam Nasser Ahmed and Imam Mashal Hamid. They are inviting the community at large to be a part. And CWSC, along with...
Go to tape two for more from Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
And we shall be presenting as well. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon you. And the meetings are every Wednesday from 6:30. Well, we're still on to about 8:30, inshallah. So we'll be looking at changing this time a little bit for narrative aspirations. May Allah's peace be upon you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
You are listening to W. Dean Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
The following lecture by Imam Muhammad is entitled Human Intellect, Part 2. Recorded September 27, 1992, at the University of Illinois in Follinger Auditorium in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
I ain't listening to him. I don't want nobody to tell me. He's a traitor. He's a traitor to the black race. You know, make all up all kind of excuses. But if they heard Hitler was going to be here today, he was a traitor to the human race. They'd be all around there, stand all out there, want to see and hear Hitler. Strange people. But that's the way things go, you know. But thank God
we do have some real, real wonderful people. And you're here right with me today. And you're going to be with me in Robbins, Illinois, or wherever I go. I know that. We do have some real wonderful people. And we are growing. Don't think I'm saying this to say I'm downhearted. No, no. We are growing. Our situation is improving. Our knowledge is growing. And we are growing in spirit and hope and faith and in knowledge. We are growing. And I will say also in worldly means, we are growing. I'm hearing about the business people of our community throughout these United States, and I feel very proud of them. They are growing. And we expect that we will continue to grow. Allah is with us. We are Muslims. We follow the Quran, the guidance of God, and we follow the example that God gave us, the human example, Muhammad the Prophet, so we should be successful. And we will be successful always. We all want to raise our grade level. This is true for all types in society. The serious-minded want to excel in the eyes of others and in the looking glass that he looks into to see himself. He wants to excel. He wants to be a little better. If he's vain, he'll just make himself look a little pretty cosmetic, you know, use a little cosmetic touch. But if he's have a man, a person of little depth, he'll question his soul as he looks into the mirror. And he'll want to make improvements on his soul as well as on his outer appearance. The jokers want to excel among the jokers and also in the looking glass too. We all have egos and the inherent need to feel good about our grade level. We have that inherent need to feel good about our grade level. The stupid person wants to feel good about his grade level. The person who delights in being stupid, he wants to feel good about his grade level. If he didn't prove himself to be more stupid than his challenger, he feels degraded. And he works hard at being more stupid than his challenger, you see. So whether it's negative or positive, all of us are striving for excellence, aren't we? So I guess Satan, he wanted to be an excellent opponent to man, and he proved himself fit for that challenge. Because he is an excellent opponent of man. Satan, the devil. The aim for excellence is a motivation in our flesh and bones. That's what we mean by inherent. It's in our very flesh and bones. It's our life, that motivation. Moreover, it's human and community service that we want. That's in our very nature. We want to be of human and of community service. Some people gain national dominance after being told their purpose on this earth is to rule the earth. Now, I've studied history and myths. And I find that that language is in the history and myths of nations past and some still existing, where they were sensitized to believe that their purpose on this earth is to rule the earth, that they are special, they are to rule other people, they are to be superior. Others gain national dominance after being told their purpose on this earth is to excel in rendering services that benefit the whole of the earth. Their purpose is to excel, compete with others, and to excel even their own achievements, their own margin of achievement, to excel, beat that mark, like a an Olympic competition, a person competing in the Olympics. He comes to the Olympics to compete there, but he is also outside of the Olympics. He's competing with his last high score, to beat his last high score. He's challenging himself to excel, to beat the last score, get a better score. Dear people, we on this earth to compete in rendering a service of the greatest use of benefit to the greatest number of people on this earth. This service may sound to you, or this idea may sound philosophical. We are here on this earth to serve the betterment of life. The betterment of life. Our prophet, the prayers and peace be on him, he said, the best of you, khayrukum, man yanfan nas, are those who benefit people. The best of you are those who benefit people, who are useful to human beings, useful to the people. The best of you. And we know he also pointed to other attributes or other merits to identify the best of us. But that's one of them. Our service to humanity is one of them. That we can't live a life, a selfish life, not caring about how our life is going to affect another person. We have to care about how our life is going to influence and affect another person. We got to live to make a contribution to the life, the human life, the life of human community. First of all, beginning with the nearest to you, yourself, your family, your immediate family, and then extending out to embrace or to encompass the whole community on this earth, all nations, all people. This is what God wants from us. And he gave us models in his prophets and messengers to show us that. Muhammad the prophet, he established that. He lived that. He didn't live for white or black or for Arab or non-Arab. He lived for humanity. His service was service to humanity. Now I hear some angels whispering, but the service is to Allah. But Allah says, nothing reach him but your obedience, your taqwa. We're supposed to do it respecting Allah above all things. We're supposed to do it to please Allah above all who want us to please. But Allah does not wait for us to help him with money or with science or with social service or with medicine. He needs none of that. Or with good counseling. Allah doesn't need any of that. We need that. So our usefulness is not a benefit to God. Our usefulness is a benefit to mankind. And that's why the prophet said, man yanfa nas, who benefits people the most. Philosophically speaking, our passions that overpower us when taking on some desire, some interest, can be a woman, can be an opportunity to earn better income, whatever it is. Passions will take us up, overpower us and take us up. Same passions may take us down to ruin, down to corruption. These passions are passions for life in the broadest context of life. But we can't understand that. We can't realize that. Everything is connected. I love this woman, and I think that this love is just for that woman, maybe. I become so much occupied with her that I think that all this love is just for her. No. She was put here. She has relatives. She has persons she loves. You see, love can't be all for her. She will have children. The love can't be all for her. Maybe. If she has no children, that doesn't matter. The love can't be all for her. They're going to arise interest between the two of you. You're going to share interest. And if you don't give some of your love to those interests, how can you love a woman who has interest and not love her interest? So you see, love is for life. Life. And the human being is a living. That's why we love it. You don't love a dead woman, do you? If you do, you're really out of it. You love the memory of a dead woman, but you don't love a dead woman. Yeah. So love is for the living. Love is for the living. And it's for all the living. And the more you grow in love for life, love life. You're supposed to love life. Love life in its excellence. Love life in its beauty. Love life in its intended direction that God gave it. Love life. Supposed to love life. Don't love death. Don't love disease. Don't love misery. Don't love pain. Marquis de Sade, he loved pain. You know what? Don't love that. Love life. Love life in its excellence. Love life in its beauty. Love life in its intended direction that God gave it. Love life. You're supposed to love life. And those who will love animals, they are more mature in their love for humans than those who love humans and don't love animals. Yes. I don't like a person who loves only human beings but don't love animals. Something in me won't let me like them. No, if you want to become more bigger and more mature in your love, more complete in your capacity for love, you have to love life, all life. Because all life is one and interconnected. All life is one and interconnected. If we had this kind of love for Allah, love for His creation, love for life, we wouldn't have the serious problems of ecology that we have now, would we? No, we wouldn't have the serious problems of endangering certain species, even man, polluting the air, polluting waters, making all these serious problems. We wouldn't have that if the love for life had been given us from childhood and had been put into our culture, or even into our curriculum, our school curriculum. No, we wouldn't have this all these serious problems. This is what I register when I read the Quran and when I study Muhammad the Prophet. Muhammad the Prophet didn't only teach respect, good treatment to animals, but also even to vegetation and trees. He said, see that you harm no tree when you go to war with the people. Don't destroy their crops, damage their trees. Don't attack the person unless they bear an arm. That's what the prophet said. Peace be upon him. Prayers and peace be upon him. Don't attack anyone that's not a bearing arm. Are these Muslims throughout the world behaving like that now? Who are they following? They're not following that great man that I'm talking about. Their behavior doesn't say so. We should understand that we do not give up love. We transfer love. Now let me explain what I mean by that. You may be disappointed in your mate or disappointed in your father, your mother, sister, or brother, or friend. And the great love that you were giving them, you may hate that you were giving them all that love. You may cut it off. That love is going to be transferred to something else. That love is there. It's not going to go away. It's only going to be shifted, directed, redirected to something else. You're going to give it to self-destruction. Are you going to give it to selfishness? Are you going to give it to correcting your ways? You're going to love the things that are best for you more. You're going to see that that person was a problem for you, and I've been neglecting myself. I haven't been putting my priorities in order, and I've been putting values and seeing my values incorrectly. Now I'm going to, so that love is transferred and shifted to other places, right? Yeah. Some will go and buy a dog, go buy a blue puppy. So what am I saying this to say? See, I told you my father was a psychologist, unlicensed, and I am too. I'm saying that to say this. God created the human being with the biggest capacity for love. But if he's not keeping to the lifeline, the human lifeline, the real lifeline of human life, the lifeline of excellence, if he's not keeping to that, if he's alienated from that, then he can become the worst. God says that he created, us in the best of most, but consequently, some fall to the lowest of the low. Some fall to the lowest of the low. You see? So that's the possibility for us because of this limited freedom or this free will we have. Now, when I see the African-American people giving themselves to foolishness, following the popular trend to just give all their free time to music, songs, dance, street talk, and if not that, self-destruction, drug abuse, violence, murder. When I see that, I see misdirected love and a reversal even of love. You know, they say love and hate are just two sides of the same coin. One side is head, the other is tail. I don't think that's a perfect description, but it does help to give a picture of how love and hate operate. You know, you love, and that love becomes less and less and less and less until you get to a point where you can't recognize any love. Then it starts to be hate. Little hate, little hate, more and more. That's how it goes. Devotional urge in our nature is very important. Devotional urge is the strongest force in human life. Devotional urge. Now, we say, oh, that boy of mine, he just wastes his life. He's not devoted to anything. Yes, he is. He's devoted to wasting his life. Everybody is going to be devoted to something. Look how strong the devotional nature is in us. Allah says in the Quran, says, and glorify God. Be excited about the new religion with the equal passion, equal enthusiasm that you had for the false God. Say, and even with more enthusiasm than that. This is what Allah tells us in the Quran. That's addressed to the Meccans who were idolaters and who made you all excited and made great celebrations and great spiritual show in worshiping or service to their false gods. So the Quran is bringing to their attention that, look, you discredit, you are not respecting your own intelligence. Now here God has blessed you with really a religion that gives you a good image, gives you excellent image, gives you excellent opportunity, makes you feel good about yourself, and you are not as excited about this as you were about that ignorance that you worship in the days of ignorance or jahiliyyah. You see? That's what Allah is saying to them. So what does that tell me? That tells me that the devotional nature is very strong. Those people that were giving their devotion blindly to those things, they were giving their devotion blindly to those things. So when they open their eyes and see with their reasoning, sometimes they don't give as much recognition and devotion to the new enlightenment or to the new value that they have. You see? And many of you are like that. Many of you would be saying, oh, praise you to Allah for all of me, jumping up on your feet every 2 minutes. Oh, praise, stand up for all of me, Elijah Muhammad. And get your quick charge and go back and repeat the same thing again. But you are not excited today. You're not excited today. Yeah, you're excited. So you need to read the Quran and say, no, when Allah bless you with Quran and the real religion of Islam, you wake up and realize that you are cheating yourself and you are cheating what you have been given by not showing at least equal enthusiasm when we should really show more enthusiasm. Devotional urge is very strong in us. We're going to be devoted to something. That devotion is going to eventually lead us to correct our ways, to correct our life, and follow the line of excellence in our life, or it's going to destroy us. It's going to destroy us. Without direction, without faith in human excellence, without faith in the direction of life that God gave when he created human beings, we find most of our youngsters, they're giving themselves to idleness, giving themselves to self-destruction, too many giving themselves to drugs and violence and even murder. What draws them to the game? Devotional nature. The devotional nature. They don't see anything. We can't show them anything that makes them feel that this is worthwhile devoting themselves to. So they're devoted to the gang solidarity, camaraderie, support from each other. That's what they're devoted to, you see? And then they go and tax and they get their own interests and they go and tax. We were coming through a neighborhood last week, and it was frightening. We saw it looked like 100 and some boys. It had to be 140 boys or more. And they were just roaming the streets. It was a little bit after dusk dark. Dangerous, very dangerous. And we said, we know something is going to happen terrible tonight. No way that many boys can get together and nothing happen to sadden their families, their mothers, their fathers, their friends. I'm sure something happened. Because they have a sense of power. When the more the numbers, the more sense of power they have. And they're young, so they become drunk. They get drunk. They're made drunk by the sense of power. And they have to realize it. They have to execute it. They have to exercise that power on somebody. They're just not going to have it. They don't have the maturity to have that kind of great weapon and don't not use it. So they have that great sense of power. They're going to attack some innocent boy or rob somebody or challenge another group of boys and kill up each other, you see? Human life is very complex. It's not simple. It's very complex. Human life is not something to take for granted. We can't manage human life like we managed cooking breakfast this morning. It's much more complicated than that. We should take seriously the management of our own human life. And any idea, whether it's religious or worldly, any idea that encourages the individual human person to accept more responsibility for the management of their own individual personal life is one that I support and appreciate. I don't care what it is. I don't care what the idea is. If it encourages the human person, individual human person, to accept more responsibility for the management of their individual human life, their own personal life, I have to salute that idea and feel very comfortable with it. The idea that just called us to a surface-level pride, to be proud of our race because we are black-skinned, because we don't burn in the sun. We burn in the shade. You know, that stuff is foolish to me. It's foolishness to me, you know. God has given every people something that is uniquely their own. And you can see merits and demerits in all of us. If you're rational-minded and intelligent, you can be made, you can be led by rational discussion to accept that no race has any real basis for claiming a superiority over another. And I'm tired of seeing our people, African-American people, following those who sell artificial pride to our people. I'm tired of that. I am. I don't have much sympathy with people like that anymore. I don't have much patience with people like that anymore. Just selling people false ideas of their origin, false ideas of their greatness. That's silly. Your real greatness is right with you. It's in your heart and in your intellect. That's where your real greatness is. It's not in the color of your skin. The color of your skin, God says, He has given us the differences of color and even the differences of our language, the tongue, the languages, as signs. As a sign. Those who are led by the devil, by the deceiver, they take sign in one people to be a sign only for that people. When the sign in every people is a sign for all people. Yes, our black skin is a sign of what's in all people. He may be red, he may be brown, he may be white. Our black skin is a sign of what's in him too. And his skin is white, his sign, his color, is a sign of what's in all people. Though our skin be black, his skin is a sign of what's in us too. But the Satan, he deceived the people to think, to mistranslate, to misinterpret the signs that God gave. And he makes the race, the white race, think that blackness is only a sign of what's in us who wear blackness. Who wear blackness, you see? The light, when it's shone, broken up into its different parts through the raindrops as a rainbow, we see the light that is really, they say white light, but no, the white light is invisible. It's not white.
We'll be right back after these brief announcements. Thank you for your continued support for Imam W.D. Muhammad's ministry. Your contributions are sincerely appreciated. Send your donations to the Ministry of W.D. Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. That's the Ministry of W.D. Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. Thank you. And now we return to Imam W.D. Muhammad.
Please turn the tape over to side two for more of Imam W.D. Muhammad.
That blood is white. That's fire. But as the light we see by is not white, it's invisible. If it was white, you couldn't see. Transparent. But the prism the rain, the water, will break up the light and show its various colors to us. Now, the red we see in the spectrum, does it tell us what's in red only? No, it tells us what's in light. Now, if you can understand light as being, if you could follow my comparison I'm making here, we all are human. Human. And the various colors that we have on our faces tell are signs of what's in every human. What's in every human? Your blackness on your face is a sign of faith. It's a sign of obedience, blind obedience. Faith and blind obedience. It is a sign of rest. But it is also a sign of death. It is also a sign of ignorance. Why? Because the beginning of the intellect is ignorance. When the intellect first comes into existence, it knows nothing. It's ignorance. Ignorance. And the wisest of men is the man who says to God, God, I'm ignorant. God, I know nothing. You know all. So the wisest of intellect is the black intellect, not the white one. Not the one that boasts, I know everything. Not the one that's trying to show off and trying to present itself as the bright light. That's not the wisest of intellect. The wisest of intellect is the intellect that shows itself black. God, I know nothing. I know nothing. Doesn't mean that it knows nothing, but it is not, the intellect is not giving itself credit for what it knows. And it's realizing that though it knows a lot, it's still depending on God. You see? So that requires great faith too. So if I would discuss to you the symbolic meaning of the term black, you will find that black has ugly meaning and black has beautiful meaning. Black has such beautiful meaning to the Arab people that they use a derivative from the term black to address each other with respect or honor. Say it, as say it, so and so and so. They still do that. As say it, so and so. It comes from sud, means black. But mind you, I say the same attributes that's in you are in all other people, in you and all other people. And the same in them are in them and all other people. So you're white too. And white has mostly beautiful meaning, especially in white culture. But in some other cultures, white doesn't have all beautiful meaning. It has also some bad meaning. Now, I'm not here ever to make anybody uncomfortable. That's not my purpose. I never want to do that. I'm not here ever to discredit anybody's ideas or beliefs. That's not my desire to ever do that. So I hope I'm helping and not hurting. Yes. There's a lot to say about that, but I... I thank Allah. I can look at a man in his face. I don't care what color he is. And his color won't prejudice me against him. No. I wasn't always like that. But I thank Allah. The influence of Quran, Islam on my life, has brought me to look any man in his face, and I will not be influenced by the color of his skin to judge him or to disrespect him or to place or to evaluate him. No. Mm-mm. I don't. Dr. Martin Luther King, he said, he prayed. His words were a kind of prayer. that one day people will be accepted for the content of their character rather than for the color of their skin. Well, I thank God that I can tell Dr. King if he is here. Dr. King, if you're listening, I'm telling you now, Wallace D. Muhammad has lived to measure up to what you hope for. I will not judge a man by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. And many times I won't even judge him by the content of his character, because I find that too many of us are innocent. We didn't do that to our character. We couldn't help it. We're just victims. And if you're shown the right way, you'll come out of the bad character into a good one. When we devote ourselves to destruction, it is a desperate cry in us to be saved from ourselves. That's what's happening. When we see our youngsters devoting themselves to destruction out there, they are crying, they are desperate, and they are crying out to the society, save us from ourselves. Our parents couldn't save us from ourselves. Our homes couldn't save us from ourselves. Now we're in the streets, and you see us, the whole society, you're looking at us. Please save us from ourselves. You'd be surprised how the psychology of the human being works. They're not aware of themselves, that their behavior is really a desperate cry for someone to save them. They're not aware of that themselves. They're needing help. Their nature's doing that, because their minds have become disabled. And it's the society's fault more than it is anybody else's fault. The whole society. Can't blame it on the individual parent, although responsibility is first on the home, on the parents in the home. But when they call it the super culture, the super influence. When the super influence of the world meets your little small influence at home, you ain't no competition for it. You are no competition for it. The child turns on television and everybody's behaving that way. It's the way of the world. It's the accepted way of the world. Child go out in the street and everybody's saying that, talking that language. When he comes back home, you talking a different language. No, your little strength that you have is nothing. The superego is too much for the ego. And the superego comes from the environment. It's the ego you get from the environment. Yes. Desperate cry to be saved from ourselves. Or it is a desperate protest against a world that accommodated our fall from divine grace, that accommodated an influence, a cultural influence, that explored and maximizes the desire in us to sin against our human devotional aim. Allah says that He did not create the human or the jinn except for His worship, except to obey Him, to serve Him. Illa liya'budun. Except to worship Him, except to serve Him, except to obey Him. This is not only an invitation for us to obey Allah, heed His guidance, respect His guidance, and follow Quran and Muhammad. That's not an invitation to that only. That's an eye-opener. That's an eye-opener. for the person who is curious, for the person who wants insight into things. That's an eye-opener. It's to tell us that if we give this devotional nature to fractions of the whole, it's going to eventually disappoint us. But if we give this devotional nature to the whole, it won't disappoint us. And there's no way to give it to the whole without giving it to the cause behind the whole, and that is God. Why should we give all our attention to race, sex, money, and unqualified freedom? The answer is understood best when we understand that there's a terminal conflict involving human motivation, terminal conflict that will lead to death, the end, total destruction. Terminal conflict involving human motivation is alienation. It's leaving, breaking off from the human interest, from the human interest, going off from the human interest, going off from the line of human excellence. For the fashion look, you know, whatever is fashionable today. I used to try to keep up with the fads, but now look like it's all blended into one thing. All you have to do to be in fashion now is just look like you just got out of Sherwood Forest bed. But for the fashion look, some will give up all their earnings. All their earnings. And will only enjoy a short-term high. Because the fashion is going to change. You see? But while spending all our earnings on these short-term highs, we are neglecting our families and our community. And that neglect is not short term, it's long term. Family and community establishment is the goal in our devotional nature. Want to be devoted to art, want to be devoted to industry, whatever. Science, whatever. All of that is to improve the life of community. So we have better families, better neighborhoods, better communities, better towns, better nations, better communities. In that nature is where the law resides. The law which rewards us or punishes us. And the language in Islam, Al-Qadru Khairihi wa Sharrihi min Allah Ta'ala. The ordinance of the law of reward and punishment is from Allah the Most High. But it operates in our social nature. It operates right. The best way to provide a condition for us to continue to move in the line of excellence is to acknowledge Creator, that this world did not happen by chance, that this world is the original work of God, the Creator. He designed it. He created it, and He is the best to guide us. One prophet in the Quran, he was challenged by the mighty, powerful ruler who took even divine authority into his own hands. and thought he had power over life and death. When this prophet replied to him, he said, "The Lord," he said, "the God who created me is the God that will guide me. The God who created me is the God that will guide me." There's great knowledge in that. There's great knowledge in that. God placed guidance in the creation. He's the creator of the creation, and he put guidance in the creation. Our religion teaches us to have a respect for creation, to value creation, and to never think ourselves to be the owners of creation, and to never think ourselves to be bigger than creation, or a bigger issue than creation itself. Allah Most High tells in the Quran, "O man, think not that your creation is a bigger matter than the creation of the heavens and the earth." So where Allah lifts us up and wants us to feel good about ourselves, that he made us Khalifa on earth, and put us in a situation, if we obey him and follow the excellence in our nature, we can get utility, he says, from the skies and from the earth. We can utilize what's in the skies and what's in the earth. And that's what modern science and technology has done and is doing. It is utilizing what's in the skies and what's in the earth. God told us that 1,400 years ago. سَخَلَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ, that he has made utility for you in what you see in the heavens and what you see in the earth. While he has paid such great respect to us and honored us so highly, he's also cautioned us too that we don't get big-headed while we are realizing the great resources and benefits of natural creation and natural law, that we think ourselves to be more important than this great vast creation we call the material universe or the material system. No. From which we are born and grow. We are born upon this creation and we grow upon this creation. Some of you here, I'm sure you're in college, you're in the university, you're attending the university. I'm sure you can appreciate what I'm saying. You know that all the knowledge you have in the best of your books in your library are nothing but revelation of what is in matter, creation, life, as God made it himself. Now, I'm sure you wouldn't be a fool to say no to that. In fact, it makes the student's heart feel good when he understands that really all of his knowledge, all of his science, and all of his knowledge that he's getting is only an unfolding of creation itself, an unfolding and illumination of matter in his own mind. Isn't that wonderful? This is the respect we need to build in our children and build in our students and build in our adult members for creation. And Allah wants us to respect creation, but to realize that we ourselves are creation and subject to the power, the overpowering forces of creation itself. If we don't follow the God who's over creation, then the creation itself is too much for us. It will overpower us and bring us down to the lowest of the low. Yes. The only power to contend with matter itself is God. And the only way we can manage matter itself, we have to have our obedience to, and give it to God. Yes, give it to God. Then you're safe. The motivation for our people when they were freed from slavery was a motivation to excellence. They wanted to become better. They were told that they were a slave class, that they, the people who were of the mind that blacks were inferiors, told our people, our foreparents, that they were fit for slavery and weren't fit for freedom. That God created them to be slaves. That's what we were told. That's what our parents, the foreparents, were told. So when we were freed, the motivation was to get opportunity for that was enslaved. The flesh body itself wasn't only enslaved. The mind was restricted. We wanted freedom for our minds. We wanted to take our minds to education, take our minds to better books, take our minds to better situations for the growth of our minds. So we were motivated by the need for excellence or growth along the line of excellence, huh? We were needing to satisfy the aim of excellence in our life that couldn't be satisfied when we were held forcefully to a class or status of slaves. Now we are free. What are we going to do with that? We're free now. What are we going to do with that? Are we going to give our minds to music, song, dance, rhythm, dope, drugs, sex, just senseless sex? Sex with no human base? Anything without a human base, without a base of human value. You have to have human value in the base of everything. If you don't have the human value in the base of anything, then that thing is going to become destructive for you as a human being. Sex. You can't just have sex life and sexual activities without appreciating human values in the very base of sex life. Human value should be in the very base of sex life. And this is what God reveals to us when we reveal the Quran. This is what the prophet wanted to lead us to. This kind of respect, where no matter what we devote ourselves to, all of us are not going to be the same. Some of us will be politically inclined. Some of us will be medically inclined. Some of us will be musically inclined. We're going to be inclined different ways. God says that. To each of you is an inclination. To each of you is an attraction. But turn all your faces to this Qibla. That's what God says. That Qibla is a sign of the original worth of the human being, the original value. Turn your attention to your original value, to your original excellence that made possible home life, social evolution, progress, and the eventual illumination of your mind, the receiving of revelation from God. So God wants us to keep that human base and the human values there in the base, keep that in the base of all of our interests. Then we will have success. In my closing, certainly I'm a man of race consciousness. And I feel good to say I'm a member of the black race, or the African American people. Certainly I do. And my soul would never be satisfied if I ignored that. Yes. My soul could never be satisfied if I ignored the need in me to feel good as a member of my people or my race. And we have a great life and a great history. But the devil, Satan, his influences, the satanic culture of the West, has just shattered our senses and wasted so many of us. But that doesn't mean we are lost and hopeless. No, we're not lost and hopeless. We have great minds in the Christian community, great minds in the Muslim community, great minds on these campuses, great minds out there in the streets. We have African Americans that are still decided upon bettering the condition of this race we call the black race. Our case is not hopeless. You're just hearing too much noise from those that don't count, and you're not hearing enough noise from us that do count. And I feel very good about our progress. We are progressing as a people. We have great minds, great people, with great human character, great heart. And they are working in many places in these United States, all over these United States. They are men and they are women. They are in all areas of human interest. But I won't be really satisfied until we have what I think we started out to have, and I believe we had it for a long time, up until maybe the civil rights, heydays of the civil rights movement, when confrontation on the streets with the white man and in the public eye took us away from that. What I'm talking about is men who volunteered and women who volunteered to keep watch on the condition of the black race, of the African-American people, and meet with each other and discuss the condition of their people, and not go out and talk to the white man and complain to him before themselves diagnosing our case and coming up with some information to address our needs and to address our problems, to address our needs and problems and whatever and sicknesses, and begin to preach through newspapers, through black newspapers, and preach from rostrums, from podiums like this, preach to the masses that we have to fight these influences. God didn't create us for this. God didn't put us on this earth for this. We have to keep God up in our mind, keep God before us. We have to remember our destiny. We had a sense of destiny with those people. And I hope that we will be influential in forming again an African-American intelligentsia that watches over the needs of our people. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
You've been listening to the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad. You are cordially invited to visit your local masjid or Islamic center for Friday Jumu'ah and Sunday Talim. Check the Muslim Journal newspaper for the dates and time in your area. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us tonight. And again, we may be going to a later time just for the planning of a time to be grateful. We are working with Sister Martha Naila Abdullah, our executive director, in collaboration with Sister Noon Najiyala and Dr. Aisha Mustafa, and Imam Nasser Ahmed and Imam Akal Hameen. The Zooms are every Wednesday. If you would love to be a part, email us at info@cwsc.us. Again, that's info@cwsc.us. I am Sister Khalida Akbar, producer of Narrative Aspirations, and we know that you have something that you learned from Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Allah Alay, that will help you reach any goal that you desire. And so we ask that you make a dua with us, and then we'll close out. And may the peace and blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala be with you and your family and all of us. Ameen. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. O Allah, grant us the excellence in this life and the excellence in the life of the hereafter, and protect us from the torment and the punishment of the hellfire. O Allah, we seek your refuge from anxiety and grief. We seek your refuge from lack of strength and laziness. We seek thy refuge from cowardice and ungodliness, and we seek thy refuge from being overpowered by debt and the oppression of men. O Allah, suffice thou what is lawful. Keep us away from what is prohibited by thee, and with thy grace make us free of worship of anyone or anything besides thee. Ameen. Surely I turn myself to thee, O Allah, to him who created the heavens and the earth, and I am not of the polytheists. Surely my prayers, my sacrifices, my life and my death are all for Allah. No associate has he. Of this I am commanded, and I am of those who submit. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Stay blessed.